We're excited to announce that our very own podcasting platform, Zencastr, has become a new sponsor to the show. Check out the podcast discount link in our show notes and stay tuned for why we love using Zen for the podcast.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
And now we should be live.
Dad! You call this archaeology? Get out of there, Dad!
All right.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Episode 87, I think.
87, nice.
Which is really confusing since the other show, the archaeology show, is episode 98.
Yeah. Yeah, we're running independent episode numbers on this, but it's sorry, I'm just listening to us and we sound good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's weird running different episode numbers, but this is a different show. And if I ever, I'll tell you what, I've got a new producer and we're just ramping him up here for the archaeology.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah. If he starts bringing in consistent guests, then, well, I might have to either release this into that feed on off days or release it into its own feed for the audio version of it. I don't know. We'll just have to see how that goes. It really just depends on consistency. So for right now, it's really handy to be able to release these into that feed because this is more of a general show about different things. And so is that one. So that's why I release it in that feed and it works. But yeah, either way.
Oh, you know what you need? You need like... You need like the APN flag you've had and put it down right behind your chair.
Well, I've thought about putting something on this shade over here because more often than not, it seems like no matter how we face or what we're doing or what campsite we're at, there's sun coming in this window in the afternoon. And if I were to open it, it would totally blind out my camera. So that's why it's closed right now. But it's like one of those, you know, old school maps in a classroom. Like I should put something down here and then like pull it down. Yeah. Go grab that APN tapestry thing. So that would be fun.
Oh my! Before we get to what we're doing, or you know, there are two things I wanted to bring up about. I was like cruising through Facebook this morning, and oh god, we just talked about right before we went on. We talked about one of them, but then the other one was also about a student who was about to graduate, and was chatting about or was putting up a post about what they were looking for in a job in Colorado. Which is amazing since I think the other person also wanted to move to Colorado, but they were like, yeah, I'm all right with being away from home, like for a week or two at a time, but I don't really want to be away from home that much. What sort of CRM work can I get? That post got like almost no replies because it's just like you're literally dreaming.
Yeah. It's like, get in touch. Yeah. Well, and what does it mean?
You know, I was wondering too.
Yeah. What does it mean? I don't want to be away from home because there are plenty of people like, you know, we work mostly in the Great Basin and there are plenty of people that haven't left Reno in a really long time from a domicile standpoint. Right. But they work for different companies that allow them to, you know, I mean, you might be gone 10 days at a time, but you're still coming back to Reno. So does that count as leaving home? I don't know. I don't think it does.
That's what I was wondering too.
Yeah.
And then the other one was someone who was wondering, because I made this mistake when I first got into business. I thought I had a job wherever. And so I moved to Southern California, which was bad and good because I definitely didn't get on that project. But it was also good because it got my butt in the gear in terms of like, you know, getting myself out there. Because otherwise, if I hadn't had that desperation to need the paper and apartment, I would have just been like sitting in my dad's place like forever. But this person was wondering, should I move to Colorado or wherever it was he wanted to move to, you know, and what sort of jobs can I get there? And everybody's like, no, don't do that. Like, I don't know what would possess someone to think that you need to move somewhere to get some, especially if you're literally just about to graduate. Oh, right. We already got chat.
Yeah. Amy said, I don't think it counts. And I think she's requiring, saying how, you know, going out and doing 10 days and, you know, week long projects and stuff doesn't count as leaving home, you know, because you're always coming back to a home base. It's those shovel bums that really don't have a home base those are the ones that people probably think of when they say, you know, where can I be? Where can I go? I mean, that's how I was my first couple of years of doing archaeology. I didn't really have a home base. I had everything in storage, and I moved from project to project, and I had everything with me that I needed. So I relied on the projects to give me lodging, you know?
Oh, there's one thing I wanted to mention. When you were like in Florida camping in that old Beetle of yours, did you ever think you'd get to where you are now?
I could fit four of those Beetles in my home now, my home on wheels now. So, no, I mean, you know what? To be honest, though, yes, because I've always kind of dreamed big like that. So I've never really thought, oh, that'll never be me. I've always thought, yes, that will be me. And how can I make that happen? So, I mean, I've probably told that story before. I don't know how much detail, but when I was on that project in Florida, it was probably the lowest point of my archaeology career, if not my life, because it was just so miserable. It was low paying. I wasn't even able to really pay my bills with the pay they were giving us, and the per diem was total garbage. And it was Monday through Friday with, you know, you had to find some place to stay basically Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, because then we met up for the project Monday morning. So without a home base, that really made it difficult. And I'll never forget sleeping in my tent in Jupiter, Florida, just because I wanted to go out near the ocean and it was closer to the project than Tampa was. I was like, I mean, I went to the CVS and bought like a, I bought a little electric water heater, like a electric heater, you know, for water, and a fan because I had, my campsite had power. So I had a little fan for inside my tent. You know, I had the whole thing just like basically wide open for a breeze, but I also had a fan in there. Then I had a little water heater so I could make coffee in my French press. And I was at such a low point. It was so humid and disgusting. And I had nobody, no friends, nobody I knew that was there. All the people were new on the project and none of them like hung out on the weekends because they all had places to go back to. Oh man, it was so bad. Real quick, Chuck Hutchison says hi, and he missed watching Sundays. So how you doing, Chuck?
But you know, I feel like that's instructive for people who maybe people in the future who are watching this who are about to get in this job to explain, because I feel like you and I had very different kind of camping experiences, and I feel like maybe, you know, do you prepare? Yeah. Like, did you just like, you know, how did you, what was the thinking process behind like going to that project in Jupiter, Florida? And like, how did you prepare for it or gear up for it or anything?
Well, honestly, it wasn't a camping project. I mean, we had a Best Western hotel room, or maybe it was a Holiday Inn Express. It was a nice hotel room for the four nights we were during the week on the project. We had double occupancy, so I had to share the room with somebody, which was terrible. But I'll tell you what, it was a sight better than my life on the weekends. My life was only like that on the weekends because I couldn't afford to stay anywhere else. You know, I mean, I couldn't afford to just get a hotel room three out of the seven nights a week. So I found a campground that was relatively cheap. And that was only because, you know, I could barely afford that. And sleeping in my car would have been the other option, but it wasn't really an option because there was, I mean, I didn't have that much stuff with me. I traveled pretty light, but I'd had to take all of it out to be able to sleep in that bug, you know. Now, granted, I'm 6'1", and with the seats down in that bug and it being a hatchback, I mean, I could actually lay back there relatively comfortably. It wasn't that bad, but I had to take all my stuff out and like set it on the ground, which I didn't really want to do in alligator country. So
that's interesting because, because when I first got into this job, when I first started thinking about even going to field school, I was like fully prepared for like camping, which is why, you know, I spent like, which is, you've seen my tent, like, you know, I've literally had that tent my entire career and I've never even had to think about it once. I've never had to worry about it coming down or letting water in or whatnot. And I just like, you know, to me, that's just like, I thought that's what the job was going to be, was just like a lot of camping and being outside.
Well,
go ahead. Oh, all right. Because I feel like a lot of students who are graduating right now, they might be watching a lot of those van life videos or looking on van life Instagrammer pages. And it's just like, you know, this job isn't really like that. Or it can be, but a lot of people who get into this job and thinking about getting into the van life, they're not like outdoorsy people, like people who would normally spend time outside other than maybe to go for a weekend hike. Like, I feel like you and I, like, you know, I've spent years of my life on a bicycle and years of my life just like being outside, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, I enjoy camping, but maybe a lot of people who are about to graduate and want to get into this job, they might not enjoy kind of working out west or any place you need to camp.
Yeah. Yeah. They might not. I mean, some of the camping experiences I've had on actual projects were, you know, really good. And some were less good. You know, like, I remember the first time I ever actually camped for an archaeology project was in, we stayed in the Virgin Valley campground up in North Central Nevada.
Oh, that was like, that was my first camping project too, but with a different company.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the first place we did camp was right there. And I'll tell you what, my first experience after, you know, I was born and raised in the Washington area with, you know, trees all around. And then I spent a lot of time in the Southeast again, surrounded by trees and things like that. And the Virgin Valley campground was probably the first time I ever pitched my tent on gravel and pound the stakes into gravel. I just never done it before. Right. I'd never experienced that before. And it was just, I was like, really, are you freaking kidding me? Now, the one thing I do love, of course, about high desert camping is I love to be nice and cool when I sleep. And
yeah, same here.
You know, we've been on, I remember one of the last camping projects I did, with you, with that company we were with, a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was out in Central Nevada, and we were, you know, it was right in the middle of summertime, and I'll tell you what, we were sweating our ass off during the day, but at night, just true to the high desert, yeah, it gets down into the 50s, and it's nice, comfortable sleeping weather.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, plenty of firewood around, and we built like a campfire.
Yeah, and, you know, yeah, I mean, that wasn't bad.
And you got to draw that giant profile that never got used.
Indeed. Indeed.
So. Or was it? No, not maybe. Or it was just never finished.
It's probably never finished. I mean, I never finished it. I got a large portion of it done, but yeah, I just never went back. So,
you know, it's interesting. Like, first time in years, I had to get all my camping equipment. Well, I mean, technically I didn't have to because, the company vehicle I'm using actually has a topper on it. And I've, you know, and, I've got a cot and, you know, a heater buddy. I could probably just throw it in the back of that. But I potentially have another camping project right after this. You know, we'll see.
Oh, same company?
Different one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to make sure all my camping equipment was like all good. Because normally I wouldn't bother hauling out that big giant tent for just like a week. Because, you know, oh, it goes up. Oh, go ahead.
I was saying, is your second camping project the one with me?
No.
Oh, okay. So that'd be a third camping project this summer.
Yeah. And so, nice. You know, yeah. So I've, you know, not only have I been doing that, but also, you know, I went camping almost 2 weeks ago now and realizing, wow, I'm like all my camping gear is meant for like camping, like for like a month.
Yeah.
And not for just like setting up for like overnight or a week, or at least here in Nevada.
Well, that makes it really difficult. Like the only, we're in our RV right now, of course, as you can see behind me, but we did bring some camping gear just on the off chance that we might go do something, even though we're kind of living in campgrounds now. And, but the only thing we brought was like a small backpacking tent. That's like 2-3 person backpacking tent. Really, I think it's like 2 person, which the two of us in there, who knows, you know, with a couple sleeping pads. Yeah, it is an REI. I think it's an REI one. I don't know.
Is it the same one you were using when we were in Lake County?
Oh, no, that's not a backpacking tent. The one I had in Lake County is like a 6-person dome. I mean, like massive box, right? That's a huge tent. That we didn't bring. Yeah, we didn't bring that because the only vehicle we have, aside from the RV, is this smaller Ford C-Max. And that tent is in this huge action packer. And if we put other stuff, I mean, we got to travel light. So, I mean, our thought was if we ended up somewhere that had some nice hiking trails or something that were leading away from the campground, or we were in a good spot, that maybe we could go on the weekends. We could go on like an overnight backpacking trip, you know, backpack out, sleep, and then backpack back. So we brought sleeping bags, some of our bigger packs, and just a couple sleeping pads and those in that tent. And then we've got other stuff that we could take with us, you know, at the same time and fit it all into the overnight bags basically. But that's about, it's like what you're saying though, as far as camping projects and camping, for work and as such goes, you're right. It's difficult to camp for the night. You almost have to have two sets of camping gear, you know, one that's just like, here's the essentials in a smaller tent. Cause when I go camping for a project, I mean, I go under the mentality, it's just like when I go into a hotel room, and I know you're the same way.
Yeah,
I go there because it's my home now. That's where I live for the next 10 days, 5 days, whatever the case may be. And that's where I'm living. And when I go camping, I mean, I bring a big tent. I bring my cot.
Same here.
I bring,
same here.
You remember seeing my setup in Lake County? I had two tables because I had my computer on there. You know, we're doing podcasting and working, and it's just like a little kitchen. I mean, we kind of set up the same way, and I think
except I brought my own shower.
Hey, I bring my own shower sometimes too. Although I gave it away last year, so I don't have it anymore. But I think, you know, I'm not quite as into the vintage aspect of things like you are, but I think the one place where you and I probably intersect is in camping, because I've always dreamed of having that, you know, huge canvas tent with the little potbelly stove in the corner and the oak writing table and the, you know, just the African expedition edition.
Well, that's what I was originally thinking of when I originally was camp shopping for that tent, but then I realized this was before I had my pickup truck, so I had to get all that stuff into the back of my VW convertible, same one I own today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was about the biggest tent I could fit in there. And that tent, you know, you've seen it. That thing takes, like, you know, when it's folded up, it still takes a full size duffel get in there. That's not even all of it.
Yeah.
I'm even afraid to weigh it.
Yeah. Amy here says, is that how it is for field schools? She says, so maybe people get that impression from field schools. And I think she's talking about the camping aspect of things. She said she never had the opportunity to attend a field school, so doesn't know. And I'll tell you what, I camped for my field school for sure.
Oh, same here.
But it was in Africa. It was in East Africa. Ah. And we were in Olduvai Gorge in the Leakey camp, and the camping area, the whole camp, but the camping area specifically was surrounded by, it was probably 8 foot tall, like, brambles that were brought in. I don't think they grow there. They keep restocking and bringing in that they're basically a border around the camp, because we wake up, you know, you crawl out of your tent and you see giraffe and elephants just like on the other side of this like natural fence. And, and we had Maasai warriors from the nearby village that were basically paid. I think they were paid in trade or something like that to basically guard the entrance to make sure not only did no people come in, no other tribes or anything like that, but no animals, specifically like lions and lions and hyenas. Basically, they're the bad ones. But honestly, other animals would have been bad too. Like, you don't want an elephant tromping through your tent in the middle of the night while you're sleeping. So that was my camping field school. You camped for your field school too, didn't you?
Yeah. And the thing is, that was my first introduction to, because I've been camping plenty of times before, but this was like in nicer parts of California where it's like stays moderately temperate. Whereas where I was camping was much more high desert-ish. It was basically the very far western edge of the Great Basin. And so it'd be ungodly hot during the day. And then at night it would get down to like the 30s and 20s. And that's when, you know, that's when I realized that a sleeping bag can have a rating, but that's the survivability rating. That's not the comfort rating.
Yes.
And that's when I got my 0 degree sleeping bag, which I still use today. And that's when I started dreaming about getting a tent heater.
I know. I tend to run hot, so I don't get the super cold sleeping bags, but the my wife found the same thing. She used to get the, you know, like 30 degree, I think is the next one up from like 0 degree. Yeah. But she definitely has a 0 degree now and loves it.
Oh, well, so. And also, you know, one thing I should point out is that camp, cause I started out with a bunch of backpacking gear when I went to field school, you know, in addition to like my old canvas tent. One of the things I realized is the fact that, camping for fun or for a weekend is very different than, when you're basically living there and like working there.
Yeah.
Cause obviously when you're camping for fun, if it's cold in the morning, you can just sleep in until the sun comes out and warms up. Whereas when you're working and, you know, your start time is 6 a.m., you know, and it's still like 20 degrees outside, it's time to go. there's no waiting. And so, you know, so it's a completely different mindset and like you need completely different equipment.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, yeah. So what kind of time frame? I it's fun talking about camping because you're talking about camping for different types of projects, but how long are you packing for right now? Are you guys going out for a really long time or are you packing for out back?
Oh my goodness. It's complicated because normally I wouldn't bother packing a lot of the equipment I'm bringing now, but it's been so many years since I brought it out that I want to make sure it all still works, you know, and that I familiarize myself with getting it like set up again.
Sure.
And more importantly, we're going far enough north that it's moose/grizzly country.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily want it, because my super lightweight setup is literally a bivy sack and a and now I have a one of those tarps, one of those outdoor tarps. It literally just arrived today, but I'm like, maybe I don't want to use that like before, like now. Like, I don't want to like get myself familiarized with setting up a tarp tent, like, you know, when it's for work.
Yeah.
Because I've literally got a 10-hour drive tomorrow, and the last thing I want to do is get there and suddenly, you know, have to spend like 2 hours puzzling how to get this thing up.
Chris Webster here for the Archaeology Podcast Network. We strive for high quality interviews and content so you can find information on any topic in archaeology from around the world. One way we do that is by recording interviews with our hosts and guests located in many parts of the world all at once. We do that through the use of Zencastr. That's Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R. Zencastr allows us to record high quality audio with no stress on the guest. Just send them a link to click on and that's it. Zencastr does the rest. They even do automatic transcriptions. Check out the link in the show notes for 30% off your first 3 months, or go to zencastr.com and use the code TAS. Looking to expand your knowledge of x-rays and imaging in the archaeology field? Then check out An Introduction to Paleoradiography, a short online course offering professional training for archaeologists and affiliated disciplines. Created by archaeologist, radiographer, and lecturer James Elliott, the content of this course is based upon his research and teaching experience in higher education. It is approved by the Chartered Institute for Archaeologists as 4 hours of training. That's in the UK, for those of you that don't know. So don't miss out on this exciting opportunity for professional and personal development. For more information on pricing and course structure, visit paleoimaging.com. That's P-A-L-E-O imaging.com. And look for the link in the show notes to this episode.
One of the other great alternatives to camping that you've done and that I've done is using your truck, you know, and the cool thing is we've both done it in very different ways. You know, we've got a, we've got a topper over our truck, and then we bought from that company Airbeds with a Z.
I know that.
Yeah, you can find the inflatable bed that fits your bed exactly. And I think we only paid a couple hundred bucks for this air mattress, maybe less. I can't remember, but it's pretty cool. And, you know, the Tacoma is a short bed, the one that we had. And the air mattress fits perfectly in, so you can close the bed if you want and leave it inflated if you want to. But then there's an extension that covers the tailgate. And that's what allowed me to sleep comfortably, was the extension. But I will give a warning to anybody using those. You know, when you move around in bed, you typically move your feet around, and that junction between the bed and the extension was in the right spot for me to just put my foot in there and kick it right off the back end of the truck or into the tent that we had over the back of it. Yeah. And it never stayed. Like, it was so tight. Both of them were from the air pressure, that the two little knobs that basically plugged it into each other just came off. So I ended up, using the Tacoma's tie down points in the back on the bed.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And running a ratchet strap around the end of the extension, and then ratcheting it into the bed, and that it never fell off again. But that was really good. I loved it. It's not so good for staying warm. I mean, one night we did have the buddy heater in there hanging from the open door of the canopy where the tent goes around. We had the buddy because it was so cold in there. But otherwise, it's a good alternative. I wouldn't do it for a really long period of time, but that would be like my overnight or several night setup if we had to do it. So.
Oh, interesting. Is that one of those things that went with your, did you sell that with your Tacoma, or is it still in storage?
No, actually we had no use for it. So the people we sold the Tacoma to, and they were actually friends of my wife's, we just let them have they got a pretty good deal. Not only did they get a good deal on the Tacoma, but they got our extra spare tires. So they got two spare tires, and, you know, I had two wheels and two tires with it. They got the chains that we bought for it, 'cause we didn't have a vehicle the chains would fit on. And then they got the airbed and the tent. I figured, what the hell, we'll throw them in. So, and the canopy for that matter. I mean, you know, like, I took that off.
Well, I mean, but, you know, isn't that like one of the reasons that's one of the reasons why you didn't take it to CarMax? I know you brought your Prius to CarMax, right?
Yeah, we sold the Prius at CarMax because CarMax specifically told us that they basically stripped the vehicle, all the factory stuff, and and try to put the factory stuff back in. I don't know how they treat a stereo, because that's the other thing they got, was our stereo. I didn't realize that stereo would have been great in this RV, and now I basically have to buy another one because it would fit perfectly. But
Really?
Yeah, that would have been a good stereo for this RV. But The other thing is we need three cameras because when I hit my blinker, the left camera goes. When I hit my right blinker, the right camera goes. And then there's the backup camera. That all plugs into the stereo. And the stereo I had in the Tacoma would take three cameras if you had them. But
Would show them all simultaneously?
No, it only show them one at a time, but they're triggered off the turn signals and the backup and going into reverse. It triggers the camera. Yeah.
Oh, so right now you don't have any cameras, I assume, aside from maybe the backup one.
No, well, we do in the RV. I mean, this stereo does have the three cameras. And the other cool thing is I can choose them whenever I want. Like if we're just running down the road, I can flip on the backup camera and see behind me. But no, what I'm saying is the stereo is garbage and I want to replace it. And the one that I had in the Tacoma would have fit nicely in here. But you know, that's the thing about CarMax too, that I'm wondering if anybody's got any experience with is, you know, when they say that they'll replace everything with, like they pull out all the non-factory stuff, which would have included our stereo. Well, what if I had thrown away the factory stereo? I'm not the kind of guy that would do that. I had it and I gave it to the new owners and I'm like, here's the factory stereo and the faceplate that goes with it and all the wiring I ripped out. Here you go.
Interesting.
You know, I was like, have at it. And, but what would CarMax have done? They've just, I mean, it's kind of hard to order a new one. Not that hard, but you know, that's what they would have had to do. So I don't know, which means they probably would have given us below book for it because of all the work they had to do, you know, to bring it back to factory. So who knows? As it is, we sold it for about $2,000 or $3,000 over blue book. So yeah.
It's interesting. You know, you mentioned like you brought your like little backpacker tent, like one of the YouTube channels I follow. What is it? The Outdoor Gear Review. Like he does a lot of camping up in North Carolina, I think. Yeah. So I was wondering if you were going to like, you know, head out there and like tick country and like maybe do some overnight camping.
I'll tell you what, if we do any overnight camping, it's more than likely not going to be in North Carolina. We might do some of that beforehand, you know, like when we head over in hopefully late September, early October at the latest, maybe we'll do some, because we're planning on taking our time to get over there. At least that's what we're planning on right now. That might change when we get there, but where, you know, I want to take a few weeks to get over to North Carolina for the fall. And, it would be great to stop like in the Rockies or something and do some weekend or even week long stays and maybe do some overnight camping there. That'd be really fun.
Ooh. And like, you know, perfect, like YouTube content.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. In fact, we've got so much content right now. It's not edited, but
oh, same here.
I know. We've got so much content and so many more things that we're able to start filming again, especially since we got on the road, that we might start releasing two a week. So,
really?
I've got to get off. I got to get off my ass and get recording though. But hey, Richie, did you see? I'm pretty excited about this because you're a YouTuber too. But well, first off, I appreciate artists and what they do. Okay.
Yeah.
And I approached somebody at my former co-working space. Well, my current co-working space. I'm just not there right now. I approached this person who I know is a graphic design artist, and she's done some stuff for some local stores in town that I really appreciated. A coffee shop that you like to frequent. She did all the designs for their bags and their logo.
Oh, wait, really?
And yeah. And I told her, I said, cool. You know, we've got this new Roadster Adventures YouTube channel for my wife and I.
Oh, is that who did your new logo? I was wondering about that.
No. She did not, because she quoted us almost $2,000 to design and give us a logo that fits all the formats and things like that. And I'm like, that is great. We can't afford that right now. So let's keep going. And then my wife and I were on our way up here to Oregon, and we were stopped overnight down in just below the Oregon border in California on 101. And we're like, we want to get an Instagram account set up, but to do that, we need an email address to get the email address. I really should finalize the website. To finalize the website, I need a logo. And so I spent that evening and I just came up with the logo. And then not only that, but I came up with an animation for the logo, which I'm still pretty happy about. It's rudimentary. You can tell somebody who doesn't have experience in doing those things did it. But the beginning of our video we released today, about 30 seconds in, has the new logo with some, admittedly with some video I didn't take. It's stock footage behind the animation of the logo, but I'm going to use my own video at some point. I just wanted to get it out for this video and get it up there. But Yeah. Once you get past the title screen now, and again, about 30, 35 seconds in, then our animated logo starts, but I'm super happy with it. It was basic, and I'm going to have a vinyl made for it this week, and we're going to put it on the back of the RV.
Wait, really?
Yeah, totally.
Cool. So, oh my God.
I'm real happy with it. Like I said, I even put it on our T Public store for APN and already ordered Rachel a t-shirt and myself some things. So I really like it. I don't see the need to change it anytime soon.
Oh my God. But, you know, we talked about this before the show started, but you know, obviously I've been like watching all the YouTube channels dedicated to like van life, RV life, camping life, etc. And one of those channels that it's so entertaining, even though his videos are like a bajillion minutes long, his name is Steve Wallace.
Yeah.
And he's like doing camping, but it's like regular dude camping. So like, you know, instead of like learning how to tie knots or anything like that, he like, you know, he was like throwing up his tarp with curtain rods and like zip ties.
Nice.
And like some of the people like who apparently for like a while he was trending on YouTube, and one of his videos was, and like a whole bunch of people were like, why am I getting this? Like, this dude looks like a homeless dude. He looks like he's living like the homeless person's life. And I'm like, man, but you know, I mean, you know, I guess that's, you know, it's just interesting because like it really gave me some real interesting inspirations, you know, about like camping ideas, or at least lightweight camping.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously, you know, I was at REI the other day trying to buy fuel and, you know, and they were completely out. And I was like, man, like, you know, like there's like rich person camping, you know, REI, and then there's Sportsman's Warehouse camping. And then there's what this dude's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the crazy part is that I went all over town looking for isobutane and butane for like all my stoves and stuff. And it's just like, man, everything was out. Although I guess maybe that's because of July 4th, even though it was like that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh wait, we got a comment. Ha. Oh, never mind.
Yeah. Hey, okay. I was going to say, you should take a look on the website too. Cause just this morning I added, I've got to change the name on YouTube. It says Roadster in the old way we were spelling it. I added a new map, and it's just, I've been looking around and I've seen some things before, and I figured since we were committing to this, I wanted to, there's some really good Squarespace plugins that you can get, for some really cool mapping features. But in advance of finding a good one, I went onto Google Maps and I've just got, you know, I made it a nice simple map background, and I've got some layered stuff in there, and I've got all of our videos linked into the points on the map. So when you click on one, the video actually pops up. And then I actually included, basically drive it. It's kind of fun. I wanted to do like the Indiana Jones style arcing, you know, from here to here kind of thing.
Yeah.
But Google doesn't do that. So I figured I'd do it an easier way and, just driving directions. So there's actually driving directions between the videos, all over the country. And it didn't take very long to put together, and it's actually, it's actually pretty cool. And it's a nice interactive map right on the website. So,
you know what, speaking of maps, like, obviously I've been fooling around with the QGIS, you know, for years. And, I finally taught myself after years of like, you know, putting it off. I finally learned how to geo-reference a map, and nice. You know, which was super easy. Like that was shockingly simple as long as you're detail oriented, because, like my first map was not very accurate, but you know, all the rest of them are good enough for like, you know, at least knowing the area I'm in.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I mean, you just got to match up a few points, as long as the source map and the map you're trying to geo-reference are accurate enough. And the stretching isn't too bad.
And the crazy part is that QGIS will automatically detect if the map you've got is in NED 27 or NED 83, and it'll do like what it calls a ballpark conversion, which is like accurate to like what, 20 meters, which is good enough for me. But the reason why I'm bringing that up is because so many of these damn phone apps like Avenza and everything, they make you pay to like download this map. I'm like, this is stupid.
Right.
Like I still, oh my God. It's just like, man. And I wouldn't necessarily mind paying if it was like a one-time fee, but it's just like a monthly subscription.
Monthly seems weird. Yeah. Did you hear, because I can't remember if we released it yet. I think we released it this week, but one of the last podcasts we recorded with the Archaeotech podcast, I talked about an app called Touch GIS. And I'll tell you what, that is...
Oh, wait.
Now, I got it for iOS, so I don't know if they have an Android version, but that is probably the best GIS app I've ever seen in my life. The only one thing that it doesn't seem to do is it doesn't seem like you can connect an external Bluetooth and read it through the app. An external Bluetooth antenna, but, and it might be just be because I didn't try it and maybe that option didn't appear, but I couldn't see it anywhere in the settings to do that. But the ability to create new projects and then create new feature classes on the fly with different attributes on the fly, and then to collect points, you can draw shapes, you can do all kinds of stuff, and then to easily export all that stuff as shape files is phenomenal. I imported shape files with ease from Dropbox. I exported shape files with ease. I recorded things with ease. I did everything, and I did most of it offline because I used it on that Jerry Canyon project, the Elko one.
Oh, really?
And, and you know, we were doing some different things, and since I had never used that app before, I hadn't realized because I just didn't think about it until I got on site, you know, some of the other feature classes I would need, you know, so I'm like, oh, I need to make a thing for tin cans. I need to make a thing for a glass, you know, something like that, whatever the case is. And I was able to change the icon, change the color, make a new feature class, put it in my archaeology group, and then take points on it. And it was just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I loved it.
Interesting. Cause was I thinking, cause it almost sounds like collector without the outrageous fees you have to pay.
Yeah, indeed.
And there, I know that for a fact that there are, and I don't think it's on Android, but I know that there are Android apps just like that. Mm-hmm. Like, thankfully I've got my phone right here and some of the apps I use, let's see. Oh my God. There's like, I have GPX viewer and then I have Map INR.
Mm-hmm.
Which, unfortunately, the real weakness of these two apps is the fact that you can't download your own base map. You have to, you have to use Google Maps with them, which for me was not as useful.
Right.
You know, that's the one thing. That's the one good thing about collectors, the fact that you can download your own base map.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, because otherwise, why am I making all these geotiffs?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. I hear you. So
it does look cool though. It's interesting. They even have like an iPad Pro here on like, you know, the main webpage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So anyway, that was really cool.
Let's go see the pricing.
For Touch GIS?
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Not bad, so actually.
And I think I paid for the annual just because I don't know. It seemed useful.
It's like what, $300 at max for a year, which isn't bad, especially if you're using it for real projects.
That's right. That's that app. No, I did not pay for the whole year. I just paid for the month, which I'm already into a second month. So, but now that we're going to possibly do these projects coming up here, I don't even know if I'll shut it off. I might just keep it on and bill it to the project. Sorry, John. So.
Interesting. Let me look up and see if you can use it with a, you know, let's see. That would be weird because like have this app and then, you know, not be able to hook it up to a GPS.
Yeah. And yeah, I never looked it up in the help documentation. So you're right. Maybe we need to look that up because I do have that EOS Aero 100 that I should try it with because I'll probably be using that.
Oh, you still have that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've still got it. It's mine, so I'm not getting rid of it.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah. Suddenly the show stops while we're looking up stuff on the internet. But because, you know, obviously that's like one of the, that was like one of the useful things when I was using Collector is the fact that, you know, it hooks up. You can either use the internal GPS or an external GPS.
Right.
Which was super handy.
Yeah.
Like, let me. Interesting. So it doesn't say anything about that. Interesting. That would be kind of weird if it couldn't. Although, wouldn't iOS just be able to, like, you know, use the external GPS just like, you know?
Yeah. I mean, more than likely. More than likely, that's, you're right. You would be using the external GPS antenna. But the problem is, are you recording the information with the shapefile that people like to see, like number of satellites, accuracy, you know, stuff like that. If it's not pulling in that kind of data, then, you know, no, you're probably not using it. So,
oh, because that was always one of the handy things about collectors, the fact that, you know, it had almost all the same parameters as a Trimble, basically.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And like, I was always amazed when I was first playing around. I mean, I guess it makes sense, you know, when I downloaded the apps to use with my phone instead of the tablet they gave me. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously it just went with the default settings, but I was surprised at how well you could configure that.
Right.
I was also surprised that the person who taught me how to use the tablet and the external GPS didn't realize that because she like was using it and then she gave it to me. And then when I got it, I realized, oh, this isn't using the external GPS at all. It's just using the internal one.
Yeah.
So that was useful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. You know, one thing I will admit, you know, teaching myself more about QGIS now,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to before, is the fact that it's very difficult to wrap your mind around what QGIS can do and what it can't do. Because originally, mm-hmm. you know, there are certain things I thought it could do before that it couldn't. And I just thought maybe I just couldn't figure it out. But now that I'm more familiar with it, I realize that there are some things it just that a lot of these GIS programs just aren't configured to do.
It could be.
Like, for instance, when you go to the USGS website, was it? I think it's called the National Map. That's where I got my paper maps,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I georeference. And there's the there's a download for the PDF. And then there's the metadata download. And one of the things I learned is that no matter what you do, QGIS cannot open up the metadata that that the USGS has.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's, it's an XML file, and I want to say ArcGIS can open it. I mean, I don't know since I don't have ArcGIS, but QGIS can definitely not open it. And I spent like hours and hours and hours looking that up.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, yeah. So, you know, that's why I had to, georeference it. Otherwise, you know, it would have just been simple just to join the two data sets.
And, yeah.
And yeah. And the crazy part is that now they've moved on to, was it? Oh God, it's not ArcGIS anymore. It's that other one. I forget. They just introduced it. There's like, was it ArcPro or something?
I don't even know. Yeah, I haven't heard.
Yeah. Yeah, Esri literally just introduced, yeah, ArcGIS Pro. They just introduced a new program that everyone basically has to start using.
Right. Okay then.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. It's it integrates their cloud app with their desktop app.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Because, you know, I remember in the olden days when I guess maybe for some companies it's still the olden days, but you know, you had to like basically someone at the office had to like do stuff on ArcGIS, and then they had to upload it to the server, and then you needed to find some place, and then you needed to hook up to the server back at the office. And of course, it was always those super clunky, I forget the name of them. I mean, I've got one here, but it's like that super clunky big box thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, what is the name of it? It's going to bug me. Oh well. But yeah, you know, kind of like your own portable Wi-Fi or cloud enabled server.
Yeah. Yeah.
You may have heard my pitch for membership. It's a great idea and really helps out. However, you can also support us by picking up a fun t-shirt, sticker, or something from a large selection of items from our T Public store. Head over to arcpodnet.com/shop for a link. That's arcpodnet.com/shop to pick up some fun swag and support the show.
Interesting. Well, so what was the Cherokee Alpha Wolf? Now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah, so our last video, it's a camper trailer, 29 foot, actually pretty nice one. It would be great for, great for anybody that can tow it. So you need to have probably at least a 5,000-6,000 pound towing capacity with it all loaded up with your stuff. But, it was a great little camper trailer. I liked it. It just wasn't a long-term living solution for us unless you're hooked into a park the whole time. You know, cause it doesn't have its own generator. It doesn't have,
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it had propane. I don't remember if I saw that like for the, oh yeah, it does off the front. I think there was propane on the front that you could probably run the refrigerator off of if you needed to. But propane's super efficient. We've got a 24-gallon propane tank on this thing, and which is really only 20 gallons, I found out, because they always reduce it by a bit. They don't fill them all the way up. So we got 20 effective gallons, and we bought it. They filled up the propane tank for us. And occasionally we've had to run our refrigerator off propane. And the propane stove, of course, runs all the time off propane. And then the water heater will run off either propane or electric, whichever one you have. And we're only down just under half a tank of propane after a month of this thing. Yeah. So it's super efficient. But anyway, the Cherokee Alpha Wolf by Forest River, it was, like I said, it was a nice camper. But the only thing I don't like about campers is, again, they're not designed for long-term usage. I mean, they're great for short-term usage, but
yeah.
You know, they're made to be light, so you can tow it behind a variety of vehicles. In fact, your Tacoma would tow it. You just wouldn't be able to put much in it, and you're not going very fast. My Tacoma would have towed it, but just not with our stuff in it, you know, and you want to put a bunch of stuff in the bed of the truck and all that. It's just not going to work. So that's why we didn't get it. But when they make these things light enough to tow, I mean, it's 29 feet long. When they make it light enough to tow by a truck like that, making it light means kind of making it cheap. Now, Forest River does a pretty good job about nicely pointed interiors, right? Everything looks good, but how long would it last if you're living in there full time? You know, how long would it last? I really don't know.
It depends. Like, you know, obviously here in Nevada, plenty of people, like, that's their house.
I mean, I'm not saying you couldn't make it work. Don't get me wrong. I just have a different standard of quality, I think. So, you know, like this thing we're in now, I mean, this thing's built like a tank. I mean, it's really, you know, well put together, custom woodwork and just all kinds of good stuff. And it's not going to fall apart anytime soon. Now, it really freaks me out when I'm, you know, leaving a parking lot or something like that. You know how you go down, it kind of slopes down onto the street and you're turning at the same time. I'll tell you what, this thing creaks and shakes all over the place when that's happening. I'm always afraid that these cabinets above me are going to fall on my head. But
you know, what's interesting is that, I forget if I mentioned this in any of the previous live streams, but I found exactly what I was looking for. There's a company in Florida that basically makes, they make extra heavy duty cargo trailers that are also double as super bare bones campers. Like, you know, I mean, they literally have nothing in them other than windows and a door. Like, you know, basically, because I know some campgrounds, like, they won't let you camp. They won't let you sleep in a cargo trailer. You know, they demand that it has like certain features, like, you know, X number of windows and like two external doors or whatever. And so they literally created this cargo trailer just for that sort of usage. And I was thinking, wow, that's neat, because, you know, for me, it's just like you mentioned, like, you know, I would not be living in it. Mm-hmm. I would just want something that mainly would just be a cargo trailer.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But interesting, we do have a few comments, by the way.
Yeah, I was just looking at that one from Patrick where he says putting site data on the cloud is insecure, and I'm sure he's referring to my uploading and downloading of shapefiles from Dropbox.
True.
Well, and possibly your use of QField as well.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that a lot of companies used Synology, that's the name of it. Synology, like, you know, box, God, I forget what you call them, but, you know, they literally, Synology only makes these like Wi-Fi cloud servers, like personal servers.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that, like, every company I know uses that. You know, they might use different size boxes. Like the company you and I used to work for, they actually use the exact same model that I have here. Which is crazy, since this is like the most basic entry level model. And the crazy thing is that a lot of companies, they don't change the default passwords. So it's like, sure, maybe you're not putting on Dropbox, but, you know, companies, but you can still be broken into, since a lot of companies don't bother changing the default passwords.
Yeah.
Or if they make their own passwords, they're incredibly stupidly simple.
Yeah. Well, and I would like to point out too, like, you know, when I use Dropbox for archaeology projects and shapefiles and stuff, I mean, I use Dropbox exclusively for all kinds of things. And of course, you know, some things they're only as secure as your username and password, which, you know, you have to make sure those are good. But beyond that, Dropbox has so many like government certifications for their security across the world.
Oh, they do?
That, yeah. I mean, it is, It is almost impenetrable, I got to say. I mean, if you're really worried about, if you're worried about your data on the cloud, it really is something to behold. So, and there's lots of things like that. Like almost anything with Amazon Web Services backing is pretty hard to get into. Yeah, and you got to think about the use case too. Like, you know, if you're a major retailer or something like that, sure, you're a pretty big hacking target for credit card numbers and stuff like that. But not too many people are hacking into an archaeologist Dropbox account. Not too many people are hacking into even servers owned by the company. Like who would do that? You know, I mean, look at the use case there. So the benefit that you get from doing these things far outweighs the security risks that are potentially involved, because you're more likely, and I've said this before, you're more likely that a field tech is going to leave their clipboard full of site paperwork at the gas station than you are somebody's going to hack into your server. I mean, that's the more likely use case right there.
And the thing is that a lot of companies are against Dropbox, but when you use something like a Synology server, you're effectively using the same thing. It's like, that's what Dropbox is. It's like commercial, it's a commercial server. And the thing is that, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter whether you're using a Synology server or whether you're using Dropbox, you still need to have all the same security precautions, because, you know, a weak password is a weak password. Anything that's connected to the internet, you know, you can be hacked, whether it's like your own, whether you buy your own personal box or just paying for Dropbox or, you know, Android or Amazon.
That's totally true. Yeah.
So I feel like Amazon's cloud service might be a little cheaper.
I don't know when you get down to it. Yeah, it might be, because they try to make everything cheaper except for buying their products. So
interesting. Does that come complimentary with Prime, or am I wrong?
I don't know. You get a lot of stuff with Prime. I know I get music, but I never use it. I don't know if I get server space or, you know, like a file storage kind of thing or not. I never really looked into it. So, but well, hey, we are approaching an hour here. So
we are.
We should start to start signing off, and you got to finish packing anyway. So
that's true.
Yeah, I'll remind everybody to check out the Archaeology Podcast Network on Facebook in order to be alerted. You can like the page, and it will alert you when we go live. And we're, again, trying to do this every Sunday, but our schedules are pretty crazy during the summertime, and you never know what's going on. And now, I mean, we may end up having to change the time. We're trying to be settled by Sundays, but when we move this RV and we go to a different campground, because my work schedule during the week is pretty inflexible, we have to be settled by Sunday. So sometimes we're going to be driving on this day, but every other Sunday, I try to make it so, you know, we're at least settled, because I've got the CRM archaeology recording, right before this every other Sunday. So, we're trying to make it work. Anyway, like the page at arcpodnet.com. I'm sorry, facebook.com/arcpodnet. always, I want to mention too, the new membership structure over at the Archaeology Podcast Network. It's now $7.99 a month versus all three different memberships that we had. So you can support us for, you know, as much as your Netflix account, and bring great archaeology education podcasts into the world. So, so that's it for that. Richie, what are your sources where they can find you?
Oh, well, let's see. It's hard to figure out how to get like a shareable link for my channel, but I just put up the link to my latest video at Happy Archaeology Fun Time.
Nice.
Yeah.
There you go.
And it's interesting because, you know, I was just looking at your website. I realized that you and I definitely have different purposes for each of our websites, because I know yours is mostly focused on your channel. But for me, I mean, eventually, hopefully one of these days, assuming I get enough videos up, I was hoping to turn it into like a general all around field archaeology resource, like, you know, where you can figure out like, you know, like link to shovel bums or link to a marked field work, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And all the, like, you know, and a link to all the various cheat sheet sources that I use and everyone else uses for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have different purposes. I mean, ours is more of a travel blog kind of thing, and we'll have, you know, we'll have it categorized into some helpful resources later on, but that's really not what we're doing there with that website. But for years, it totally makes sense, and it would be a great resource to have and link to. Yeah. So,
oh, interesting.
Yeah.
God, Facebook's giving me all sorts of internal errors. Anyway.
Sounds like it's time to go then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. God, so you already got merch for your channel?
Well, I have the TeePublic store with APN. So once I made that logo, I went over and threw it up on there real quick. I'll probably have to take it down later since it's not related to the APN. Although Kind of is, because we are doing some archaeology stuff on there, and I do own the APN, so I feel like it's okay. But we'll see. We'll see. So,
oh, but you know, before I forget to ask, like, how are the how are merch sales going
for the APN?
Just out of curiosity. Yeah.
Not too bad. We have several a week, I would say.
Not that many.
It's not like we're retiring to a private island in the Caribbean with that money, but every little bit helps. Every little bit helps. So every time people buy something, and since it seems like mask wearing is going to be with us for a long time, they have masks up there, which is kind of fun. And I put up a few new designs that are specific towards masks, and you can actually get any of our designs on two different styles of masks too. And I think they're $10 and $14 or something. I can't remember, but they're, it's pretty affordable. And you know, if you want one and you want to support us and support hygiene, then go over and get one of those. Maybe I should put this, you call this archaeology logo on a mask. That'd be fun.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Before I forget, by the way, what did you talk about on, did you record CRM archaeology today?
Yes, we did one today, and we talked about, we spent the most of the time talking about the concept of good faith effort. It's in the language for recording cultural resources. You're supposed to do it. You're supposed to record with a good faith effort. And we talked about what the heck does that mean?
Oh, what'd you come, what conclusion did you draw?
There's no conclusion. Everybody has their own ideas on what it means. So the one conclusion we all came to is that it really is based on, it ends up being based on your experiences as and educational level and skills as an archaeologist. And we all did agree that we want to go back to 10 years ago when we first started or earlier and say, and possibly re-record some of those archaeology sites we were recording because now we know more.
Interesting. Now, and is that different than due diligence?
Well, due diligence is not really in the language of the law.
Oh, it's not?
Not really. It really says to a good faith effort, and that's what the context of the law of the regulation is. So it's so that's why we talked about it. Yeah.
Oh, Brandy says she would totally buy an APN mask.
Hey, they're up there at arcpodnet.com/shop. Click on the T Public store, and there's like 30 different designs up there, and you can get any one of them on a mask. So
wait, seriously?
Head on over, Brandy. Yeah, absolutely. All the designs now, they just added mask to their list of things. So Richie, if there's anything you want to see on a mask from this channel or anything else related to this APN, let me know and I'll put it up there. You can buy the mask today. You know, also if anybody has any ideas and we can get them on there, TeePublic discounts new designs. I think it's for 48 hours or something like that. They discount 20-25% or maybe even 30%. I think it's 20% discount for everything purchased with that design for the first couple of days. So
really,
So it's pretty cool. So
interesting. Like I'm literally just looking it up now, even though we should probably be wrapping up the show.
We are wrapping up the show. So thank you everyone for that. We've got 10 viewers right down here at the last minute.
Wait, seriously? So
yeah. Cool. Thanks everybody for coming in. And again, Richie, are you going to be here this weekend? Are you going to be available?
Yeah. It's tough to say because the way I understand it is that we're supposed to drive back Saturday, but I was looking at the historic maps because obviously I downloaded the 2020 topos, but the 1995 topos from where we're working show a bunch of old mining features that may or may not be there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. God, it's harder to get the mask on, you know, on the TeePublic store than I thought. just going through it now.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh yeah, you got to look for it. Yeah, you definitely have to.
That's so irritating. All right.
Yeah.
So everyone stick at it because it's definitely not on the main page. It's not like filtered by products. And if you click on the on any design you like, it won't be in the drop down menu, which is how I usually look for it.
Yeah, you got to click on one of the designs and then go scroll down past the T-shirt, and it's down in one of those columns there. I just linked to one of the APN masks. Yeah.
Hang on. I just want to double check to confirm. No, actually, interesting.
No, you click on the design, and then you scroll past the T-shirt, and it's basically under the hoodie column. It says tank top, crew neck, then it says mask down there. Yeah.
Oh, wait, so it's below hoodie. Oh, interesting, because I'm not seeing it at all. Maybe... Oh, well, there it is. There. You mean down below the down below the icons?
It's down there. It's around there somewhere. But I linked to one of them that I like right here on the page. So let's end this because we got to go.
Yeah. sorry about that.
Thanks everybody, and feel free to go in and buy some masks. There you go.
Yeah. Alrighty. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time. You know, whenever that is.
Yep. Thanks, Richie. All right. Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. You can also find us on the Lyceum app, a podcast app just for educational podcasts. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US dollars a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to archpodnet.com/members for more info.